Congress gets back to work on health care. From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Amy Scott, in for David Brancaccio. The Senate returns from its 4th of July recess today with health care reform at the top of the agenda. Before the break, moderate and conservative Republicans disagreed over how to go about repealing the Affordable Care Act. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra is here with us live. Mariel, where does health care reform stand now?
Well, when we left off, Republican leaders were having trouble getting enough votes to pass a reform bill. You know, there are factions of the Republican Party. They don't agree on all the details of health care reform. And with this particular bill, it's that moderate Republicans want bigger subsidies for people with low to moderate incomes, and conservative Republicans want more of a focus on individual responsibility.
So bigger incentives for people to use health savings accounts, for instance?
Exactly. And the thing is, for this bill to pass, 50 senators have to vote yes. There are 52 Senate Republicans. So without Democrats on board, there's not a lot of room for dissent.
And raising the stakes, Mariel, just today we have some news that the number of uninsured Americans has grown this year by some 2 million people.
Right. Since 2008, Gallup and ShareCare have measured the percentage of U.S. adults without health insurance. At the end of last year, that rate hit its lowest point, 10.9%. Now it's jumped to 11.7%. And there's concern that fewer people can buy insurance because insurers are leaving the marketplace and because premiums are going up. Keep in mind, though, before the Affordable Care Act's health exchanges opened up, the uninsured rate was 18%. So it's still much lower now. Also, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that 22 million people would lose insurance under the latest version of the Senate health care reform bill. Last we heard, though, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was rewriting the bill to get more Republicans on board.
Marketplace's Mariel Segarra, thanks. The Securities and Exchange Commission wants to encourage more companies to go public. More IPOs, the thinking goes, can be good for the economy. Starting today, a new rule allows all companies, regardless of their size, to file IPO paperwork confidentially. Before today, that option wasn't available to businesses with revenues of more than $1 billion. Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
Twitter confidentially filed for an IPO. So did Snap, and so did companies that we don't know about because they never actually went public.
This lets them go through that process and not disclose it till they're really fairly confident that the market conditions are good for going public.
Richard Truesdell is at Davis Polk. He expects most all companies will now file confidentially and release their financials only when they're sure they want to pull the trigger.
Having that information out there publicly for a long period of time suggest to the market that your IPO isn't going well, that you're somewhat damaged goods.
But will this actually increase the number of IPOs? Maybe, but not by a lot. Jeffrey Vetter is a partner at Finnegan West.
Nearly every IPO company could already have done this because there's very few companies with over $1 billion in revenues.
But he thinks big companies could be more willing to take that first step now that it's secret. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
What's your sexual orientation? How about gender identity? The U.S. Census Bureau was considering asking those questions on upcoming surveys, but not anymore. And advocates for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, or LGBTQ communities, say they're concerned about this shift. KQED's Sam Harnett reports.
The U.S. lacks simple information about the LGBTQ community. How big is it? What is the average income level, life expectancy, or unemployment rate? Without data, Rebecca Rolfe says policymakers can ignore you, pretend you don't exist. She directs the San Francisco LGBT Center.
We need to be visible. I think we need to be clear that there are, in fact, LGBTQ people everywhere, in every state, in every county throughout the United States.
Questions about sexual orientation and gender identity would connect the LGBTQ community to all the rich data of the census. During the Obama years, the Census Bureau began considering these inquiries. When contacted about the decision not to ask these questions, the census referred me to a statement that says there's no federal data need for them. Similar questions have disappeared from other federal surveys. Now, this isn't just about visibility, but money, says Kenneth Pruitt.
What drives basic fairness is numbers.
Pruitt directed the Census Bureau in the 2000s. He says $4 billion federal dollars are allocated based on census data, and it indirectly touches all budget decisions. If you aren't counted, it's harder to advocate for your share. But Pruitt says you can't blame the Bureau for this policy change because it's apolitical and takes directives from federal agencies.
It's not like the Census Bureau sits around a table and says, oh, what should we ask the American public today? That just doesn't happen.
To say that it's simply a nonpartisan, nonpolitical agency ignores that it has highly political functions.
Peter Scarry is a professor of political science at Boston College. He says the census wants to appear neutral, above the fray. But he says it's inherently political. Groups have to fight each other and lobby just to be counted.
The space on a survey is limited. There's only so many questions you can ask about so many things.
It takes years for the census to research, test, and add new questions, which is why LGBTQ advocates say this is such a big setback. It could be a long time before members of their community get counted. In San Francisco, I'm Sam Harnett for Marketplace.
And an international court has ordered tobacco giant Philip Morris to pay millions of dollars after a long battle over cigarette labeling. Australian law requires that cigarettes be sold in plain packages with graphic health warnings. Philip Morris fought to overturn the law. The Sydney Morning Herald reports the company could now pay as much as $38 million to cover the Australian government's legal costs. In Washington, I'm Amy Scott with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.